The State House early this morning approved the next step that's necessary that could lead to an in-state natural gas pipeline from the North Slope to Anchorage and South Central. The bill authorizes $400 million for what is estimated to be a $7 billion project. Supporters call the bill a starting point for a project that would offset concerns about energy supplies to the rail belt. Anchorage Republican Mike Hawker says the bill does not describe a final project in any way.
What has been discussed so far from the standpoint of those people moving a project forward is what they're calling a base case. It is to put on paper a potential proposal that is then developed sufficiently to take it to the open season where we let the markets have their say, the willing buyers and the willing sellers who will find out if there is a viable financial transaction to be put together.
In a floor session lasting 7 hours, minority Democrats unsuccessfully introduced 17 amendments, most of which addressed issues involving gas availability to Fairbanks and the Interior and others, increasing regulatory oversight, protecting consumers concerned about the possibility of high prices. Anchorage Democrat Les Guerra argued that the plan does not allow the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to exercise its protective function. He argued that the prices will be set by the sellers and the pipeline company with little, if any, state control.
I do not trust that private corporations will always have the interests of our consumers in mind. I do not trust that the major oil producers in the state will always have the interests of Alaskans in mind. And so to let them set the rates without any meaningful review by a consumer protection agency, I think, is the wrong way to go.
The bill's sponsor, House Speaker Mike Chenault, said Alaskans have been waiting for a gas line for 30 years. He said without the project described in the bill, the state has no option except to watch the rail belt run out of energy. He said the success of the project will rely on alignment of all the stakeholders and interested parties, and the bill is only an opportunity to make that happen.
You're not going to have a pipeline project without shippers and without customers. And that's just plain and simple. We can wait as long as we want, but until we can get those two groups together, we'll never have a project. And if we continue shooting ourselves in the foot, I can guarantee you that we will never have a gas pipeline.
The 27-12 vote was largely along caucus lines. The Senate has not yet considered the measure. Local school district officials around Alaska testified to the House Finance Committee yesterday about the budget deficits they face next school year. The hearing came on the heels of Monday's presentation from the Parnell administration justifying the governor's education spending proposal, which does not include an increase in the base student allocation. School officials pushed lawmakers to reject Parnell's plan and increase the BSA. North Slope Borough Board of Education member Mary Sage says it's difficult for the district to compete for teachers.
The Alaska Rural average turnover rate is approximately 30%. As a board, we have prioritized this issue of teacher retention, and today it is 27%. Remember, we are recruiting teachers to live in the Arctic. When we left Barrow, it was 34 degrees below zero, and that does not include the wind chill factor. I have not had running water for over a week because the main water line is frozen, and there's 45 homes with frozen sewer lines.
Sage says it's hard to convince a teacher to come to the North Slope, where California is offering equal pay and $6,000 signing bonuses. Eva Kinovac of Point Hope says this is the first time in 11 years that the school in her community will have the same principal 2 years in a row. She says students feel the biggest hit from budget deficits.
There are some things in the villages we can't do, and one of the things is alternative schools. In Barrow, we have an alternative schools, and they reach maybe 50 to 60 kids a year. But in the not only in our region, but throughout the state, I think of all the ones that we cannot reach. You know, there's a lot of kids out there that we are missing.
The education focus continues today with testimony from the president of the State Board of Education. The first in a series of scoping meetings for the proposed Susitna-Wantana hydroelectric project took place in Anchorage Monday, kicking off the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's environmental impact analysis of the proposed 700-foot dam. Talkeetna is the first community downriver from the dam, and some residents are wary of the impacts the $4.5 billion project could have on the ecology of the river. Lorraine Nettleton has more on the story.
This week, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission began a series of scoping meetings to identify issues presented by the proposed construction of a 700 to 800-foot dam on the Susitna River. FERC spokesperson Celeste Miller says all public testimony given at the meetings will be incorporated into a draft environmental document, and the Alaska Energy Authority will have to resolve any issues before submitting their formal application in 2015.
We're trying to get as much information as we can on issues that are important and that are relevant to this proposal. And when we get them, we do look at all of them. And when we issue our environmental review documents, in this particular case, we've determined that we're doing an environmental impact statement. We're going to issue a draft environmental impact statement and a final environmental impact statement. In our draft environmental impact statements, we address all of the comments we receive from the public and any party. We address them in that document.
The proposed Susitna-Wantana hydroelectric dam has plenty of momentum behind it. Last year, the state gave the Alaska Energy Authority instructions to make the dam happen and invested $66 million to back the project. Rick Leo is a member of the Coalition for Susitna Dam Alternatives and a longtime resident of the Upper Susitna Valley. In February, Leo had a chance to join Alaska Energy Authority's new Susitna project manager, Wayne Dyack, for a conversation about the project.
Isn't it a more appropriate stance for AEA to take to say, we would like to build this dam, but we don't yet know if we can? There were 34 unresolved issues in 1984. There was no license given. There were many things that weren't concluded, and in fact, most of the data your own agencies are telling you is irrelevant now. It's just too old. Too many things have changed since then.
Well, I would argue that it is very relevant information that, yes, things have changed. We need to update that information. I don't think any of us want to build a project that's going to have adverse consequences that we haven't foreseen. We want to make sure we do our homework here and address those issues appropriately.
Jan Konigsberg from the Hydropower Reform Coalition says that the timelines established by the FERC licensing process were streamlined to assist pre-existing dams looking to renew their licenses. The timeline leaves 2 years for federal and state agencies to conduct studies that will be used to inform the permit application, which Konigsberg says is not enough for an infrastructure project of this magnitude.
I think sort of the rub here is that FERC's integrated licensing process, which was designed for relicensing of existing projects, is being used for a project of such massive complexity and so complicated that the timelines that FERC mandates in the licensing process don't seem reasonable to get the required studies done.
The Alaska Energy Authority has voiced its support for a request by the Department of the Interior and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration for an extension on the comment deadlines, which would give those agencies more time to address the issues brought up in this week's testimony. In Talkeetna, I'm Lorian Nettleton.